Hey, this is Ryan from Papa John's in Hixson. Welcome back to Press Row. Answer today's Papa John's poll question at Facebook and Twitter at ESPN 105.1 The Zone and online at ESPNChattanooga.com.
Welcome back into Press Row here on ESPN 105.1 The Zone. David Pascal, Jay Greason, Wells Guthrie producing the show. Hoping everybody out there is having a terrific Thursday, and it is a pleasure to welcome back into Press Row ESPN basketball analyst Sean Farnham. Sean, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
Doing fine, thanks. Here in Chattanooga, with what the Tennessee Vols are doing, we get a mixed review. Some fans are excited. Some fans feel slighted that Duke and Kentucky get all the attention. You have been very open in your praise for Tennessee. What do you like most about this team, and what might be your biggest concern about the Volunteers?
I really don't have too much of a concern other than the fact that defensively at times they get disengaged, where they come out and they start a game and they look great and they get out these big leads and then all of a sudden they relax a little bit. So that would be a little bit of a concern for me with this team. But when you look at their offensive efficiency numbers, how well they play, how together they play, I think they leave no doubt they are the best team in the country. They've been the best team in the country. As I've said, even though your fan base, when they listen to me call games, think that for some reason I don't feel that way. But they have been the best team in the country since December. So I want all of Vol Nation to hear me. I've said it on Get Up. I've said it on Halftime. I said it even during the Texas A&M game when you all thought that I was a big Aggie fan all of a sudden. You're the best team in the country. You have been for a long time. Ride with this thing. You're going to enjoy the Final Four when you get to Minnesota come in April.
All right, and Sean, that was my next question, because when you look at this team in a March run, and I was fortunate enough to hear you on Golic and Wingo today, you touched on it. I mean, you talk about Kentucky's 12 team with Anthony Davis and Kid Gilchrist, and then Duke in 15 with Okafor and Winslow. I mean, those are your 2 one-and-done champions. When you start formulating kind of your thoughts and predictions for March, are you naturally more comfortable with a team that's been together like this year's Tennessee team or Villanova, Carolina, the last couple of national champions we've had?
Without question. How could you not? I mean, you look even at, you know, the Carolina team, they've been together. They've gone there. They've made a run. They came up short. The Nova teams were a ton of experience, overflowing. Look at the UConn teams that won national championships. They were groups that were led by juniors. They weren't led by freshmen. And it is really hard to do it as a freshman group. Now, you're going to ask me, and this will, I'm sure the only thing your fans will hear is this. Does Duke have that special makeup this year? Potentially they do. But if I'm looking at this, that's why I believe in Gonzaga. It's why I believe in Tennessee right now to win a national championship, more so than I do a lot of other teams that we talk about.
Sean, you're the first that put me on this earlier today when you were talking about Zion Williamson at Duke, and he's shooting 29.8% from three. You were talking about how he has struggled to shoot the ball, and that the college three is a mid-range jumper in the NBA. I mean, there's no doubt everybody likes the year he's having, and everybody recognizes the hype he walked into. But you brought up a heck of a point that teams are going to have to debate whether to draft and kind of develop. There's a developmental element to Zion Williamson in the NBA, but you've also got the fact that everybody knows he's going to instantly put butts in seats. That makes for a really interesting dynamic, doesn't it, come draft time?
There's no player that has been more polarizing than Zion Williamson in recent memory in college basketball. That is an accurate statement. There has been a lot of inaccurate statements that have been made about Zion, and it's unfair to Zion, in my opinion. You know, to say he's the best prospect since Michael Jordan, that is just categorically wrong, and does not accurately portray the type of player that he's going to be at the next level. He is strong. He is athletic. He has great bounce. He can rebound. He dribbles. His vision is actually better than I think he's even shown, and I think it will show out at the next level, his ability to find his teammates with a more spaced floor. I think that's where he's going to have immediate value. But this idea that, like, he's just going to be able to go to the rim and dunk on everybody all the time, it's not accurate at the next level. They're going to force you to shoot. And if he can't shoot, that's going to cause a lot of problems for him to have success right away. And I laugh because the guys got, like, overthrown with the idea that I said that Zion Williamson will not be an all-star in his first 3 years in the NBA. The fact of the matter is, look at Jason Tatum and what Jason Tatum is doing right now. An elite-level scorer on a really good team that is consistently winning. He's not an all-star.
Sean, if
so
I had...
No,
I'm sorry.
It's not easy to get there. It's not easy to get to that level where you're leading a franchise and thriving to the point where your peers and the fans are both lining up saying, you're the guy.
Do you have a top three? And I know this can be subject to change. There's still a lot of the college season. If you had to pick your top three NBA draft picks, if you were drafting players, who do you like?
I would go with R.J. Barrett, number one, because I do think his shot is actually has the ability to get very consistent really quick because the form is good, the release is good. There's just a couple of mechanical things to work on. I would say that Zion would be number two. Ja Morant would be number three. And I think Ja Morant is a kid that we don't talk about enough, but he's got an opportunity tonight on ESPN2 to show out across the country the kind of athleticism and skill set that he brings to the table. His explosiveness does remind me of Russell Westbrook as a point guard, but he's an elite-level passer as well. His competition level has been low. When you look at the teams in which they've played, I think 15 out of their 17 wins or 16 out of their 18 wins or something like that has come against quadrant four or non-Division I teams this year. So you wonder, can he do it on the big stage against the best competition? I think he could.
Yeah, I saw plenty of him with that Auburn game, that 93-88 or whatever it was. He was absolutely fantastic in that game. You're listening to Sean Farnham, the ESPN basketball analyst here on Press Row on ESPN 105.1 The Zone.
All right, Sean, I've seen you a bunch on Get Up. If y'all played horse, where do you finish? If it's you, Greeny, Jalen, Richard Jefferson, and Maria Taylor?
Probably ahead of Greeny. I'm very confident of that.
Right.
Probably definitely behind Richard Jefferson and Jalen Rose. But I think one of the most underrated aspects of Maria Taylor is her athletic background. We just see her as such a great professional and such a star. I nicknamed her the franchise because she seemingly is on every major event that we have at this company. But she was a baller back in the day, too.
Right.
I don't know how much time she's put in on her shot. So I'm going to say I could beat her, but it'd probably be close because I spend more time on my golf game than I do on my basketball game.
Okay, that's interesting. Are you a little bit surprised on in five short years where your career has landed you? I mean, you're now overall, David introduced you as basketball analyst. I mean, you're doing as much college insight and NBA insight across all these various platforms. I mean, you're a rising star at the worldwide leader.
I appreciate that very much. It's been a good ride. It was a shift in role this year for me, moving off of Super Tuesday, which, you know, you've got to close your eyes and trust your bosses that they're putting you in a great situation. And it certainly has been that way for me. And I'm grateful every day to have the opportunity to talk about basketball. And, you know, I covered the NBA prior to me coming to ESPN when I was with the Lakers and the Clippers in Los Angeles. To be able to get back to that a little bit is great. Because I do think that there's an intersection point that we have. I mean, look, we're talking all the time about these guys, the stars of college basketball today are hopefully going to be the stars of the NBA moving forward. And to have that ability to cross over and discuss that and, you know, get involved with James Harden and what he's been able to accomplish. And I've known James since he's 16 years old out in Southern California. It's been a great ride. It's been a lot of fun. And I'm looking forward to the next couple of months continuing to try to push myself to expand out. And in the meantime, bring energy and passion for what I do. I like to have fun when I do my job. I don't like to just sit there and talk X's and O's or try to teach all the time. You've got to be able to enjoy what you do, and I certainly have had the opportunity to enjoy this season a ton.
Without putting you too much in harm's way in the eyes of Vols Twitter, which can be a bitter, bitter bunch, what do you
no
see?
No kidding.
Yes, no.
Tell me something I don't know.
Yes. Tell me what you think happened Saturday night in Rupp.
I think they're going to win. I really do. I think the matchup that you're going to have to watch, there's two matchups in particular, and give you a sneak preview. I will be talking about it on Get Up tomorrow morning. But two matchups that I really am focused on. One is going to be obviously the guard position. Jordan Bone has been outstanding, one of the best guards in the country. But Ashton Haggins has come on as well, and he's been very disruptive. His ability to jump passing lanes, create steals and opportunities for Kentucky to score out in transition has been a big part of their success. I know they took the loss, obviously, the other night, controversial loss against LSU. But overall, he's been a big part of their defense. And prior to that game against LSU, if you look at the metrics over that 10-game win streak, their defense was at a level that we haven't seen out of a Kentucky team since 2012. Of course, that was the team that won the national championship that was extremely bought into the defensive end of the floor. We'll see if they can get back to that on Saturday night. So that matchup's going to be really key. The second matchup, obviously, is going to be P.J. Washington and Admiral Schofield. P.J. Washington, over the last seven games, has been phenomenal. His efficiency is off the charts. But then, as Vols fans know, Admiral Schofield has been doing that all season long, not just for seven games. And I think it's going to be very interesting to see how the strength of Admiral Schofield, the emotional leadership that he is able to provide for Tennessee, how that works against P.J. Washington. I think when you look at the balance within the offense, you look at the three guards on the outside that have been able to shoot the ball so well during conference play, in particular from beyond the arc, I think you have to give an edge to the number one team in the country. And they've had Kentucky's number, whether it's been in Knoxville, and of course last year they were able to get the win inside Rupp Arena. The thing that stands out to me, and this is a great stat that I asked for from our researcher, we got great researchers here at Bristol, Kentucky has not lost back-to-back home games as a top 10 team in the Associated Press since December of 1966. That's pretty crazy because you think wow. about how long and how often they have been rated inside the top 10 in the Associated Press. It does not happen. It has not happened. That's what Tennessee is up against when they go into Rupp Arena on Saturday night.
That was way before your tomahawk dunks with the Bruins. You're listening to Sean Farnham, yeah. the ESPN basketball analyst here on Press Row on ESPN 105.1 The Zone. Sean, the NCAA bubble, every year you read about how it's the weakest it's ever been. I mean, you know, speaking from the SEC standpoint, Florida's a team that's kind of been a game or two above 500, but with a decent non-conference schedule, I mean, they've got a shot. You look at the Pac-12 potentially getting one bid, and of course, Chattanooga plays in the league like the Southern Conference that's never had a two-bid league, but you've got Wofford and UNC Greensboro that could break that this year. What about this bubble?
Well, it's extremely weak. I mean, because you mentioned it, Florida is 1-9 against quadrant one teams so far this college basketball season. Yet they're very much so in the thick of it. Look at a team like St. Mary's. Their net ranks about 54, I think, right now is their net ranking. Most of their wins are quadrant three, quadrant four games. They haven't beaten anybody in a quadrant one. And so I think, you know, when you look across the country right now, because of how bad the Pac-12 is, and really the Pac-12, the A-10. They're driving this discussion right now because those are conferences where you normally would see a combined probably 10 teams in the NCAA tournament field, and you're looking at potentially just getting two. Well, that opens up eight bids. You have to fill out your bracket. You have to have the teams in the field. So this is why when we get this discussion of let's expand the NCAA tournament. Why? We don't need to do that. I mean, it's perfect as is, and in most cases we have – we always say it's a weak bubble. It's always going to be weak towards the end. But now you're looking at potentially like 11 at 12 seeds and below being to a point where you're sitting there going, okay, how does this team even get into the NCAA tournament? And certainly that doesn't mean that they can't have an upset. We've seen those before. We've seen great runs come. But it's going to be really interesting. Like Clemson, for example, last night took a loss to Miami. Well, their upcoming schedule is daunting. They got to go at Louisville. They've got UNC coming up as well. They're sub 500 right now in the ACC. They don't really have a great win. Their best win of the season is in conference play against Virginia Tech. So their resume doesn't look great, but they're still probably safe right now just based on what's going on, in particular out west, where the Mountain West Conference is a one-bid league. The WCC might get two if San Francisco or St. Mary's all of a sudden goes on a run and gets to the conference championship game and loses to Gonzaga. And then outside of the Pac-12 really looks like a one-bid league because even Washington, who's in the driver's seat and only lost one game. Now, if they go 16-2 in conference play, they're probably going to be safe regardless of what happens in the Pac-12 tournament. But they don't have a single top 25 win on their entire resume. They lost every meaningful game that they had in the non-conference. They got smoked at Auburn. They got smoked by Virginia Tech. They lost to Minnesota. It was not a great non-conference schedule because they didn't get any of the quality wins and the opportunities that they had. And so that makes them even vulnerable. And a clear example of that is the fact that the selection committee looks at a team like Nevada, who's had an incredible season so far, and has them on the four-seed line because, again, they don't have any high-quality wins. And so that's why if you're Washington right now, you took that loss against Arizona State, you're panicking a little bit moving forward.
Sean, this is such a fun time of year. We've yet to have our first of two Tennessee-Kentucky games. We've yet to have our first of two Duke-Carolina games. But there is this federal investigation that's out there. What is the latest on that front?
You know, I think it's just kind of a wait-and-see thing until the NCAA tries to decide what it's going to do. I mean, they're starting to get some of that information now as more and more of these assistant coaches are pleading guilty. More of the evidence that was not even non-admissible into court will be turned over to the NCAA and allow them to open up their formal investigations and begin that process. I don't think we're even close to being done with this thing. I think what we're going to find out is who actually is on those tapes, what was actually said. And I think if athletic directors are hearing anything that even remotely indicates that there's a willingness to at least explore the opportunity to cheat, I think you're going to be really concerned about that head coach and their positioning and where they're at. And I think that as we get to about, you know, probably May, I think more and more is going to start to come out on this thing as far as where the NCAA is at. And I know people are wanting this to be done before the NCAA tournament. You can't rush this. I mean, look, the NCAA took 6 years to look into Jim Boeheim. It's going to take a while to look into all these coaches and all these programs that are related and involved in this case. So you've got to sort through the information, and you want to make sure that you get it right. And even if that means that you retroactively have to come back and say, you know what, that team probably shouldn't have played in the tournament, or that team shouldn't have won the national championship, so be it. But I think doing it right and doing it where you're not going to rush to a decision, because if you rush to a decision and it comes out that coach was not actively involved, but you thought that they were, then you open up yourself to a whole other part of the litigation and the court case world that just continues to drag the sport down into the mud.
All right, Sean, you've been great. We've only got about a minute left. We'd love to close with a rapid fire. First thing off the top of the head, ready to play?
Yep, let's do it.
All right, LSU, are they more likely to be a Final Four team or a first weekend flameout?
First weekend flameout.
Lakers, playoff team or not?
Not.
When you played Crenshaw High School in the state championship basketball game, were you intimidated?
Not at all.
Listen, Sean, great stuff. Thanks for all that you do to promote college basketball and for all your work on ESPN and your work with the NBA as well. It's hard to confine you with just a college basketball analyst anymore. Thanks for all that you do, and we always appreciate you joining us here in Chattanooga on Press Row.
No problem. You guys have a great rest of the afternoon.
All righty. Sean Farnham of ESPN joining us. 648-1051 is the number. Back with more here on Press Row on ESPN 105.1 The Zone.